to equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full-service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown Triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Coming back here for the second half. Got about an hour and 5 minutes. For the second half, and Tom Lute is going to join us to talk about the concept that kind of broke out yesterday. I'd heard about, you know, the rumblings that this was in the works and in the offing, and kind of burst on the scene yesterday. And in fact, there's any number of parts of this we want to let Tom talk about, but first, it's always a pleasure to welcome Tom Lute back to the show. Tom, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on, Steve. Love your show.
Not at all. And over the years, Tom, we've talked about all different kinds of things, and you know, you've been kind of a go-to for any number of industry needs. And this is, you know, this is different. It's got echoes of something that Frank Stronach conceived and wanted to try like 15 years ago. There's elements that you know seem to incorporate certain parts of lifestyle merchandising of the game. Give us the introductory portion of the discussion, how it was conceived, the National Thoroughbred League.
Thank you for the chance. And yeah, I don't know why I seem to pick very interesting projects. None of them are ever easy. But I actually even talked to Kevin Plank, for those that remember. He looked at a concept somewhat like this, but one of the most intriguing things about this is Randall Lane, who's the Forbes editor, and Bob Dougherty, who's a financial guy. One's East Coast, one's West Coast. They started this idea with Martin Panza, many people know, and Chad Brown. And so it was formed before me. Merton brought me in and I took on a lead role this fall. And it's, to me, exciting, very challenging. As we know, our industry some for some reason likes the word change to be negative versus potentially positive, but it's very different from the aspects you talked about, in my opinion, from the standpoint we're creating a blend or a hybrid of a lot of the things we've heard. And these guys that formed this concept did this without that knowledge. They're not horse guys, they're business people. And that's why they brought horse people in. And in essence, and I'd love to spend as much time as you want talking about it. You know, maybe I can talk about horse racing forever. But in essence, we're trying to revitalize the on-track experience. And that's the core message. How we're going to do that, we'll talk about. And listen, we're not we're not dumb enough to believe that we've got it all figured out. This will evolve. But the theme is somewhat mimicking the Formula One for those that have followed it. We're going to have our own documentary. It'll take a year to get that done. So we'll have TV cameras following characters in this game, from the jockeys to the owners to the horses and to the events. So that'll be on, you know, a documentary series, very much like Drive to Survive is in Formula One racing. Unfortunately, it'll take a year to get that content because they're going to spend a year following and then producing, or whatever the right term is for the TV guys out there. But we are going to try to create these events around weekends, very much like I said, the racing, and very much like Derby weekend. You know, we don't have aspirations if we're going to do that right away, but we want people to come in for the weekend and have a great time. And we want to bring them to racing. So, you know, for most of your listeners, I'm guessing, you know, a lot of people, as you know, have already heard from, ask me what the heck's the difference between this and just a day at racing. Well, we're looking at growing the business. So we're trying to get, you know, we're kicking off at Kentucky Downs. So we're going to have events down in Nashville and have hopefully a great weekend there, capped off with the racing at Kentucky Downs. And we'll provide an environment that's different from what they'll do on a regular day, because we're going to have entertainment. We're going to do everything we can to create a concept where we're filling in the gaps, as I like to say. I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, this isn't about getting Tom Leap to come to the races. They've got me. This is about getting the people that aren't coming, and why aren't they coming? And we're trying to listen to people, and these guys have done a lot of studies, you know, and it's very difficult. Every sport company, every sport industry is dealing with this. I mean, I'm not a baseball guy, but all I heard was the grumblings of shortening up the game was going to ruin it. And it's already kind of a moot point. Everybody's accepted it. So, you know, we can talk about it, but that's what it is. I mean, I can go into great, great detail, but we want to create an experience once a month. We're only doing five this first year. We're going to have themes at each one. The home team's going to have its own little, you know, idea. Like, it's easy to use Randall Lane. He's a co-founder, and he's also the owner of the New York team that events at Meadowlands, and we're tying it into night racing with the New York Food and Wine Festival, and we partnered up with them, so we're going to have celebrity chefs there, and it's going to be a great weekend, and we think it's going to be a great way to introduce people to racing.
Lay out the structure, because even before you do that and lay out the structure, you reference the team, and I want you to kind of introduce these six entities, because there's, you know, there are some very well-known names, you know, included on that front, including, you know, I saw Joe Besseker. Joe's going to be involved in the Philadelphia franchise. But first and foremost, Tom, is the way in which the concept was written about yesterday in the two news pieces that I read, how etched in stone are these elements, or is this still a work in progress? Because the way it was introduced in written form, essentially, it provoked this, to me, very silly knee-jerk reaction about how it's doomed to failure, and this is stupid, and it's a waste of money. I mean, it's unbelievable that all we hear is how the industry never does anything different, they never try anything, they experiment, and then here comes an experiment, and that's no good either.
All I can do is laugh. You know, I've been on racing commissions, I've chaired Breeders' Cup, I've bought horses that have run well. I've bought expensive horses that ran horrible. So I've got a pretty good suit of armor, but nothing's etched in stone. It's definitely not a knee jerk. I've spent, gosh, 6 months working with these guys and tweaking. And, you know, honestly, we were going to run at a few other tracks sooner, but because of all the challenges of a startup and getting all the contracts and getting all the team put together, well, you know, like any business, you run into issues. And so we've shortened this first season, but the idea of it being knee jerk is crazy. The idea of it set in stone, absolutely not. But the concept is, for the first year, you know, these guys, what people don't understand is, as you know, in an interview, the writer does their best, but they summarize an hour conversation into 30 seconds of material. And so, you know, no excuses. It's just hard. So the concept is, each team's going to have a roster of active horses. And each event, they will enter horses, and I'll get into the details and I'll back up, into each race, because we're going to work within, and this is one of the big misconceptions, we're working within the race card. The racetracks, we've got contracts. All this has taken me a long time, but, you know, we've got contracts with the races, or the racetracks. We've got agreements with the horsemen. We had to get all that done, and that's been part of the battle of announcing this. It's, you know, we couldn't come out and tell you what we were going to do until we had all that ironclad. So, you know, and I'll give you a detail. We'll pick on two tracks, you know, just because Kentucky Downs first, it's turf only. And they run large fields and, as everyone knows, huge purses. So we're going to run two races there. And because the teams are down to six for this first year, each team will have two horses in both races. So they'll have 12 horse fields. But those races will be in the condition book. It's just the condition's going to be restricted to National Thoroughbred League owned horses only. So that'll be the reason the horses will only be our horses, which is agreed upon. We pay the purses. And we're doing that to work with the horsemen. But the handle, you know, to the average person that walks out there, if they don't look at the condition of a race and just sees 12 horses, that individual won't know, if they're not paying attention, that it's an NTL race versus just a race within the card. So when you read a lot of the misconceptions of us taking everything away and doing all these things, none of that could be as so far from the truth. So on the Kentucky Downs Day, those two races, which haven't been determined if they're going to be the first two, the middle two, or the last two, but they'll be carded just like for the pick threes, pick fours, pick fives. Those will just be right part of the their regular card. And like I said, it'll just be restricted to our horses. We're doing that because, you know, we're working within the environment of where we're at. So when we go to Tampa, you know, we'll run three races, and that's the traditional program. So each owner will have one horse. So, you know, one of the unfortunate things is first year is we'll have some small fields, but this is the first year we're going to expand, and we've gotten a ton of support. It just was a timing issue. We'll have many more next year, and the ultimate goal will be to have divisions just like any other professional sport so that we're not traveling so much with the horses. But the concept is, you know, pretty basic from that perspective. What we're trying to build on is, how do we get, and I always use the phrase, your neighbor, the guy that lives next door that never goes racing. I mean, you know, as you know, I ran Santa Anita for 3 years. I was a lunatic. I interviewed everybody I ever ran into. Have you ever been to Santa Anita? Why or why not? And I think that's one of the things that discourages me about our game. We've gotten very content on people betting on ADWs and sitting on their couches. And as much as we need that, I am very fearful if we don't continue to create an environment, it's a dying situation. And I think you have to have those environments. Now, we're not going to get people, especially living out here in LA, people aren't going to come out all the time. We know that. I think someone told me there's typically 20 different events on a given night. So there's competition. But, you know, you do one or two things. I joke about it. You remember, everybody should remember those commercials, the easy button people had on their desk. I wish there was an easy button, and we know there's not. So that's number one. That kind of gets into, is this just thrown out there? Absolutely not. I've spent hours and hours talking to people and thinking about it. But one of the things we want to do is we want to find out why people don't go race anymore. We all sit around and say we know, but you got to talk to people. I commend Ron Winchell and Mark Falcone that bought Kentucky Downs. They do an enormous amount of survey surveying to find out what makes people come and not come. Some of it's obviously for their gaming versus racing, but we're going to do that because we've got to get people back to the track. And we don't believe that we've got the magic pill that's going to get everybody to come back and start betting. But I do believe, and, you know, if we pick on the big events, how many people really went to the Derby because they wanted to see so-and-so run? It's an event, and that's what we're creating. We're creating events that will ultimately convert some people into betting, which is ultimately what has to happen for tracks to survive.
I absolutely understand the the social aspect, and the when you think about the kinds of entertainment industry people that have gotten involved here, we see Nelly's name and Rick Ross. We just came off a sale for 2 days. Rich Mendez, the label producer, he is buying and selling horses. He's involved. I mean, you've got obviously some major people from the industry. Steve Asmussen, you mentioned Chad Brown, Mike Smith, and Chantal Sutherland. You've got NBA players. I imagine hockey players, they love the game. When you think about trying to, you know, extend an outreach, these are people that, you know, that will generate interest. And that, I mean, that's half the battle in some cases. And even if, you know, even if people do just come because it's going to be a great party and it's going to be a fun scene, I talk about the Preakness infield like this, Tom, people might show up at the Preakness infield, as a teenager to get started. But then by the time they're in their 20s, they're paying attention to what's going on, you know, to the horses circling the infield. And then by their 30s, they're players and who knows. So I'm a big believer wherever we can, you know, generate interest that can be converted into, real activity and participation, we can win. And obviously the people that are behind this, you're talking about what appears to be, you know, financiers think, if they think that the industry is worth investing in, that's a positive message in and of itself.
Yeah, and that's probably the hardest part in an interview like this, is to circle all those points, because I'm just not that bright. But that was one of the things that brought me in is, you know, one of the greatest lessons I've got, I spent 30 years in this business, and going around to these tracks selling this has been an incredible experience for me, because as I bounced around in different roles, you know, you get kind of focused on what you're doing. And I, you know, since I had left track management, I was buying and racing, and then I've kind of been out for a year or two, and it's been a real eye opener of the change that we're going through. And I don't see it as a good change. And so when these guys approach me, I'm like, you guys know what you're getting into. And when you hear their optimism and their goals and what they're planning on doing, you have to embrace it. And for some reason, I don't know other industries, it just seems like we don't. We like to say, oh, this won't work, that won't work, this won't work. And we don't think, I don't think there's one part of this that's going to be easy. But I will tell you what I love. I love the passion. And it's, for every person that's negative, I should show you my phone. And I got blown up yesterday, and it'll continue of people so excited because we're trying to revitalize energy at the racetrack. And we need that, as you know, Saratoga. I mean, God knows we'd all love to recreate that somewhere else, but, and we're not going to do that. We know that. We don't have false expectations, but we also have, you know, a lot of plans and a lot of goals, and we're not going to accomplish them in 2023. We're going to work our tails off to get there. But, you know, one of the things people don't understand, and this show gives me a lot bigger audience for that, is, you know, there's an event team. If you put me in charge of the event team, we know we'd fail, because it's not even my bailiwick. I mean, the idea of getting these celebrities and rock stars and movie stars and athletes in, I think's awesome. It's not for me. I'll be the first one to tell you that. That's not going to move Tom Luke, but we're not worried about Tom Luke. These guys that have millions of followers and they say they're going to go down to Kentucky Downs for the weekend, that will make a difference. And that's what's great about this. You know, people have called me and said, well, what about this? What about this? This is a big organization. These guys are funded and they're looking down the road. And so, you know, I've got the naysayers, you'll be out of business in a year. I'm like, well, they don't know the funding model. And, you know, it's just amazing. We just love to sit there and immediately say why it's going to fail versus, gosh, isn't this a great opportunity that 5 years we might change the game again? And that's truly what we're looking at. We're not looking at this year. I mean, some of these events, there will be great reception, and there's going to be people to say, oh, they didn't get as many people as they thought they were going to get. We don't know. We're going to try our damnedest. We're spending a lot of money. It's funded, and these guys are behind it. And our opportunity is to reach people that we're not currently reaching. Thank God that's not my job. And we've got a marketing department. We've hired, I don't know, for those that know some of the like MPE companies, I mean, people don't know a lot of these companies probably in the horse business, but Leonard Armato was Shaquille O'Neal's original guy, Oscar De La Hoya. This guy's got such great vision. He started the AVP volleyball tour. And so you got a guy like that, that'll tell you he's not a horse guy. So he and I spent a lot of time talking because I have no idea what he's done. Well, he's on the team. We've got these celebrities, you know, I'm, because of my business, we got Chad and Steve, and I've used them a lot in trying to discuss this. Tom Amos has helped me a lot. And then we went out to Mike and Chantel because we want diversity and we want people to understand it. And those guys are super excited about this. So as you know, two steps forward, one step back. But the good news is it's not one step forward, two steps back.
give us a feel for the horse sourcing. And the training, you know, the is this going to be an opportunity to, you know, put some horses in some people's barns that, you know, to spread around, frankly? I'm curious about that. And then, you know, how do you deal with, you know, the obvious challenges of, you know, it having a roster of horses is one thing, you know, having them all be ready for, you know, a series of races is another. I mean, and this is a problem that's been encountered in so many different ways, Tom. You know, from Breeders' Cup years, I can remember, you know, the attempts to merchandise a potential matchup of certain horses, and that, you know, you can't guarantee that they're going to, you know, both be there. This is not like the Thrilla in Manila. You know, where you know, you're going to get Frazier and Ali no matter what. The, you know, keeping the horses together, and give us a feel for how that's going to work.
And that's one of the biggest talking points in the horse industry. It's been interesting doing a lot of these interviews, and obviously this show would be one. And then you get on other places that are just talking about the concept, and they don't even discuss that. But, and that's my role. So, you know, when people ask a lot of these questions about getting these other celebrities and all that, that's not my role. We have other people doing that. But so here's how the roster is going to work. And we're the league was set up, and I've just been told this, I wouldn't know, but we were set up from a lawyer's perspective, very much like professional sports. So if you owned a team, we'll both pick on you. If you bought the Kentucky team, you would own, well, that would be a seven team. So you would own 1/7 of the league. And that's very much like the NFL and I guess these other professional sports. So your investment is in the league. And with that, we're going to have a draft. Now, the draft's going to be virtual because I'm not going to have a bunch of horses in one spot. But we're going to acquire, and we haven't gotten into the great details of this because, you know, it is going to be a hybrid and it's going to be a work in progress. But we're going to either have some leasing, which might even be short term, long term, we're going to buy, we're going to have a bunch of different deals. But I'm a big Jerry Brown Thoroughgraph guy, so I use his services, and we're working with him on trying, because one of the most important thing is just trying to get competitive racing for the benefit of the track and for the breeding fan. But so we're going to try to put together a 6-horse roster. The draft in the beginning is 36 teams, so I'm going to have 36 horses, and we're going to create a draft, and we're going to make it fun, and, you know, who knows how well it'll go, and we'll work on it, but we'll have a great owner's draft one day. It'll probably be in early July, and you'll be picking just like you would. We'll have a, you know, people will decide who's the first person, and then pick, and then you rotate, but you'll pick 6 horses, so you'll have an active roster of 6 horses, and we're trying to manage that in a way that's best for the industry and best for the teams. We don't want to take a bunch of horses away from people, and that's not our intent at all. But, like, again, I'll pick on you. So you're going to have picked six horses out of our draft. Our first race is going to be at Kentucky Downs. You're going to run four of them. And we're not telling you which trainers to use. That's up to you. We're not messing with the system. You know, because it's a small stable, I will be an advisor to these people for, you know, if they want my opinion. They may be hiring racing managers on their own, or their trainer might be their advisor. But we'll just say it's you, and we'll just, you know, because I'm good friends with Steve, we'll say you decided Steve Asmussen is your guy. So you got six horses. Well, day of entry, which at Kentucky Downs is probably that, what, Tuesday or Wednesday, you'll enter your four horses, two in each race. And we'll do our best to create, like I mentioned earlier, we're going to create some film and footage of this. So we're going to try our best to create drama and create fan interest. And I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent, but this is what people have to understand, how we're not flying by the seat of our pants. We're making our series within our series a point system like FedEx Golf. So in Kentucky Downs, like I said, it's only two races versus three working with the track. So those races will be different points. And the tracks where there's three races, the first race, the winner might get 10 points. The second race, the winner might get 15. And third race might be 20. And the point system goes down. They've got a mathematician that's kind of studied this algorithmically like they have for FedEx Golf. But so that'll be the drama of where you'll place your horses, because you're going to put your best horse most likely in race three or in race two at Kentucky Downs. And the reason we're doing that is we're going to have a winner every week or every event, excuse me. And that's where we're going to try to differentiate. You know, at the end of the day, we've seen a lot of reality TV shows, and we're going to have a celebration, champagne toast, and a little party within our little group, because we're trying to build a different crowd. We're trying to build long-term, not short-term, team ownership. And we want people to root for your team, the Kentucky Stallions, whatever you call them. And we'll do that through having those celebrations. But that point system will accumulate very much like FedEx Golf, so that you're stocked with more points, but the person that's in last still has a chance at Tampa to pull the ultimate upset. And there's a championship, the point winner at the end of the championship. We're doing it New Year's Eve. It was a great idea on Tampa's part. They wanted to do it New Year's Eve. And you get $1 million. The winner does. There's a $2 million pot, but $1 million goes to the winner. So going back to your horses, you know, you'll run those four horses. Now, we're going to have an independent equine committee where Martin came in. I'll be involved, and we're going to get some other people involved that will review. So when your team, say, two horses just, you know, they're unsound, the bow tendons, who knows what happens. You can't go out and buy a horse on your own. We will either have a supplemental draft, or we will present horses to you. Hmm. And the reason we're doing that is to keep our races competitive. You know, I've been criticized saying, why are you only getting allowance type horses? Well, we're not going to go out and buy $1 million horses, because if it's that easy, everybody do it. We're going to use a rating system. And that's where I'm using Thoroughgraph, and we'll use other services, and we'll have experts to give opinions, plenty of experts in our business. But you lose a horse or two because of retirement, we'll bring a couple options that you and other people can buy, trade, but they have to be approved by the league. And that's where the league has some authority. We're not overstepping. We're not getting involved at all in the racing jurisdiction, but we can get involved in the rules and regulations of the horses in our team concept. So, you know, Mike Rapoli's a friend, so I like to pick on him because he's easy to pick on. He can't come to you in Tampa and bring you in a ringer so that you win $1 million. The league has to approve your horses. And we're doing that with tools to keep the racing competitive. Now, if you own a horse that blossoms, then you're going to dominate, and that's great. We want that from a fan interest, but you know, one of the things, and I'm trying to cover a lot of information, but one of the things is, as we talk about, you know, we want these horses to continue running if we can, because people want to follow horses. But as you know, that doesn't work out. And so we want people to follow the teams. We really want, and it's, you know, it's not available today. It will be at Meadowlands, head to head and betting against teams because they have fixed odds. But we really want to see that happen where you're betting Nashville versus Jersey or somebody against Tampa. You know, that would be, because that's going to get the average fan. I mean, we've seen sports betting take off, and horse racing, let's be honest, it hasn't changed because we can't get creative with our opportunities to get new people to bet. I mean, one of the things because I'm a degenerate gambler, on that documentary, we'll have, and I think this is important, we're going to have the opportunity to put little lessons in our shows. Like, for instance, one of the things I've talked about is we'll be able to educate people what the whip is really used for, not in a two-second situation, but on one of our episodes. And I think that's really important. And it goes back to, just from my perspective, that drive to survive in Formula One. I knew nothing about Formula One and really still don't, but I've watched a bunch of the episodes. So now I can act like I know what I'm talking about. Well, how many, I get to do that on Tuesday night, Monday morning, whenever I want, because it's on my Netflix account. Well, imagine us having some episodes over the next couple of years, and they talk about how to read the racing form. You know, we're not going to get into details, but there's nowhere to ever do that. Nobody gets a chance to get educated. And I use a reference when the computer came out, especially us men with our egos. We didn't want to admit how stupid we were. So what did they do? They made that book, Computers for Dummies, and you got to read it at home when no one saw you. Well, we're going to do that. We're going to take that show. We're going to make it fun because that's the way it'll sell. But we can teach people why the whip's used. We can teach people about horse maintenance, and we can get into the backside. We can teach people about reading the racing form and why to bet. I mean, one of the things I love about betting more than anything is I'm betting against you. I'm not betting against the house. Hmm. And you'd be shocked at how many people don't know that, how parimutuel really works.
Sure.
So those are chances, and, you know, I'm covering a lot of her stuff, but I get really excited about that. When I think that we have a chance to educate the world, technically, on that show at their freedom, they can do whatever they want. You can watch the same show 10 times over. That is an opportunity, in my humble opinion, tracks are going to hate me saying this, that's the greatest infomercial in the world to drive people to the races, because we're going to have a show on it, whether it's Netflix, Hulu, whoever they end up selling it to, because we're, that's an important part of these owners. When you talk about, you made that comment earlier, people know this is planned out. Instead of selling it now, they're paying to have it done so that we can control the content. Hate to bring it up, hate to talk negative, but one of the reasons is we want to approve the additions because we don't want it to come across. Remember when Gumbel came out with that HBO story and it was really negative? We're paying for our content in the final edition because Billy Rappaport, great horse guy, is going to be very involved with us on your channels.
We love it. We just we spent time with Billy at Derby and was part of some people heard his philosophy and approach in the segment he did with me during the Derby lead-in show. Talking to Tom Lute about the upstart National Thoroughbred League and trying to get, you know, as much of a handle on this as we can because, you know, bits and pieces got reported yesterday. And one thing that Tom has identified, you know, people right away assumed that that 6 teams meant 6 horse fields. And one of the instant, you know, reaction criticisms was, oh, sure, 6 horse fields. It was news, Tom explained, 2 horses in the races. So 12, yeah. In terms of, I suppose you're going to try to have all male, right? You're going to gelding, you're try to have it avoid fillies, or will there be female divisions too?
We won't, because the one of the blessings for this is the restricted races to our league, so the conditions will be just NTL horses.
Right.
Honestly, in the beginning, just trying to be fiscally responsible and good for the game of not taking horses out of play. We'll probably focus on colts and geldings only because, you know, it's going to take time. And I think I mentioned we were originally going to have 8 teams the first year, so we were going to have 8 horse fields. Our plan is to get to 12 teams next year, definitely 10 because we have the tracks already asking for it. But that helps that side. But as far as colts, fillies, geldings, I mean, we're open. I mean, I've had a couple calls from racing syndicates, and this is where we can evolve. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we're going to have 2 horses, 2 races at Kentucky Downs September 3rd. I won't say that we're wide open to it, but we're trying to listen and do things. And some of these racing syndicates maybe have one of the races just racing partnership board. And we can control that. You know, I've got to do a lot of work through to make sure it's in the best interest of the league. But we can control that because our races are controlled by us because we're putting up the purses and they're restricted races. But, you know, the ultimate goal will be long term. You know, listen, if we want to dream big, I know someone's going to get mad at me for saying this, but, you know, if we can get big enough down the road, we could have a day and own the day and have all kinds of races, long races, short races. But in the short term, the next couple of years, we're going to try to keep it tight just so there's very few horses needed per team, just so they don't sit on the sidelines.
I got you. And I mean, in terms of distances, is that how you're going to approach, you know, the aptitudes?
Yeah, I mean, Kentucky Downs will have to start at 6.5 just because, you know, that's the other thing. As you know, this game can get really challenging when you go to different tracks. I mean, Breeders' Cup's had to deal with that. You got to work within the confirmation of the facility. But we're mainly stay with sprinters this first year just because it'll allow us to have less horses in our stables.
Tom, in terms of reaching out, you know, you mentioned, and I can tell by the way you talked regarding Kentucky Downs and where it's going to start Labor Day weekend and New Year's Eve at Tampa, that they were excited. I mean, talk about the kind of reaction you've gotten from the racetracks and also from prospective, you know, either prospective lessors, people that will lease the horse, or prospective buyers. How far along are you on that front?
Well, I mean, you know, and I expected this. When the press release goes out, the first people you're going to hear from are the people that are your supporters. So I'm riding the high wave right now. I've not got the social media where I'm sure I'm being thrown under the bus, but the tracks are excited. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, and I say this very respectfully, we're bringing them activity, revenue, and opportunity at no expense. So we're not asking the track to do anything. They're giving us restricted races. That's why we're allowing the handle to be theirs, but we're putting up the purses to quote, work with the horsemen. So, you know, I'm not a big fan of the phrase win-win, but it is a win-win because we're promoting racing. We're potentially, and, you know, my job's on the line to provide competitive, good races with crowds. So the track wins. So they're very excited about it. You know, it was hard. I'm not going to lie. It was difficult in the beginning because it's new and trying to explain to these people. And the questions are, is this really going to happen? Because, you know, unfortunately, Steve, you and I have been around too long. We've heard and seen so many proposals. And to answer the question now, because it's out there and my name's there, those that know me, the reception's been great because everyone's, you know, everybody that's a horse lover wants to see our business get back to be fun and exciting at the track. I mean, for the days you can't make it, it's great that we've got RTN and TVG and all the ADWs we've got. But, you know, I still love going to the track. And, you know, like one of the, I mean, I'm a dreamer, but like when I think of this, one of the things we want to do, and it depends on the timing and the racing, but like grab the jockeys after the race with the quick drone video and let them walk through. We've seen this in other sports. Let them walk through the decisions they've made so that when I throw my program at the TV screen of why Mike Smith didn't go in that hole or did go in that hole, he can give you that play-by-play. And I think stuff like that is important for us to understand. We've got to try things. Some are going to be great. Some are going to be bad. We're going to make mistakes. We know that. But I think doing stuff like that and trying to get people to understand. And one of the things I did at Santa, I wanted the horses to be out in that walking ring a little bit longer because fans want to come out and get close to those horses. And we've got to remember that. Those that spend the time to drive out, park their car, walk through the gates, we've got to remember to reward them for their commitment. And I want to do that. We've got restrictions, obviously. You know, we're a gambling sport, so there's rules and regulations, but we've also got to test the waters of ways to create a better experience. And I just think there's ways to do that. We're gonna push our luck with tracks because we're gonna try to do some entertainment between races. I mean, one of the things I'm hearing more and more and more is how people get bored between racing, and we can just put our head in the sand and we can just deal with it. And you know, we've got to be very cognizant of the surroundings and the horses, but you know, do I want music, I don't personally, but it's not about Tom Luke. I mean, if you get online and you look at what they're doing in Hong Kong right now, they're playing music in certain parts of the track between races, and it's a young crowd hanging out. And that's all part of the long-term marketing of getting people to the track. We got to try stuff.
There's no doubt. And there's there's certainly no harm in any of this. And it's not like it is taking away from other parts of the game. It wouldn't feel. I mean, I know some people said, well, there's 36 horses out of circulation.
Yeah, let me interrupt you on that, because I've heard that a bunch. Yeah. Even the tracks were like, Tom, how are you going to do this? Well, here's my answer to that. Just look at where we're going right now. I'm sitting in Southern California. I love San Anita Racetrack. Every gambler on this radio show right now knows we're dealing with a short field issue. My job is to create big fields. And you know how we do that? We get these celebrities. We get these people to get people back into horse racing to become future owners and future bettors to grow field size. Can I change it overnight? Absolutely not. We didn't get into this position of bad field size overnight. And the naysayers that say we're taking horses out of racing, I'm like, that is so unbelievable to me. These guys are spending millions of dollars to get new owners and new horses back in the game. So I respect people's opinion, but I laugh at the short-sightedness of you can't do that. Like, I'm like, yeah, well, we could stay on the current path we're on, and I really don't like where that's going. It's just unbelievable.
No, agreed. There's some interesting questions coming in. One other quick thing,
because sure. I'm a golfer.
Yeah.
And I listen. You think the PGA could create that hole-in-one that Michael Block hit?
Hmm.
I mean, for golfers that follow this, the guy got invited to the tournament this weekend. We want things like that to happen, and they only happen by taking chances. The PGA lets local pros try to qualify to get in there, and it's the most incredible story for the golfers out there. We want things like that to happen. God knows how it'll happen, but boy, are we rooting for that.
A couple of questions, and you did mention replacement horses, but I got a question about replacements. You'll be constantly keeping tabs on, you know, potential additions to the rosters, correct?
Correct. But here's what we'll do. And, you know, as we see an issue where we need horses, we'll create a supplemental draft. Again, it's very regulated from our league rules. But we're also not going to take those horses. Like, you know, let's just say you've got a horse that we're talking to you about. You're going to run it until we buy it, because we need all the horses we can in racing to be racing.
Are you sourcing anything from South America or Europe, et cetera, the way the Hong Kong horses are sourced?
We'll be open-minded to, I mean, listen, I won't say his name, but one of my friends that's a bloodstock agent called me about 6:30 yesterday morning, and he wanted to know what the over-under was, how many bloodstock agents had called me from the press release. So we will look at every horse to bring into our league as an opportunity if it makes sense for racing and our league. We won't restrict ourselves, but honestly, taking horses from overseas, that'll be long-term, because, you know, we want horses to race. And in the short term, you know, we're going to be buying horses and immediately getting to the track and racing. So I think when we get bigger and we have more teams, we'll have a much bigger roster of horses, and it'll be easier to do that. But at the end of the day, I'm going to get inundated, and I'm telling people we're starting to build and follow horses, but we're not going to buy them until July 1st.
Let me ask you about the conditions of the races being asked. Lasix use. They'll be able to run with Lasix?
Yeah, one of the things that's super important, it's a great question. We're running in a different state every event. So we're running under the state rules and guidelines that they have enforced, and we're very supportive of HISA. I know it's one of those controversial things, but we're very supportive of that. We're going to have a veterinarian, quote on staff, but he doesn't have any jurisdictions, but we're going to make sure that he has the ability to talk to different vets. We're going to do everything we can to encourage and promote the safe as the racetracks want. I mean, one of the things that's frustrating is to think that people don't realize the tracks do everything they can to make it a safe track, but The conditions will be the race. We're not a graded stakes race, so they'll be able to run on Lasix. That's their choice. We're not getting in the middle of that. We're not messing with racing. We're just having our own league within racing. Does that answer your question?
I think so, yeah. I mean, and I figured, you know, considering that you laid out the idea that these be low allowance-type horses, high-value claimers that are out, you know, horses out of condition, I suppose, are the ideal candidates here, right?
Yeah, they can be, because at the end of the day, our conditions, you know, or will be strictly that they're an NTL owned horse. So,
right.
And you know, listen, we might get a horse that, as you know, this game's crazy. We might get a horse that just freaks and just destroys them. That'll be an unfortunate part for other people, but it's no different than a dominant team, or, and that owner's going to be really happy. And it will create good stories, but you know, that'll be a good problem to have. I hope we're defending a horse to jump out of the box and just be far greater than all the other ones. But going in, they're all going to have raced. We're not buying babies or 2-year-olds and run race, because we're a racing league. We're not a raising league. I won't say that we won't someday. It would be lovely to think that somewhere down the road that we're having yearling drafts and 2-year-old drafts,
right.
But we're a racing league.
Listen, I the concept to me is exciting and has potential, and anything that, you know, anything that brings the type of people that, you know, you can sense this is reaching out to, you know, not to mention the television exposure, because that part hadn't been as, you know, as much of a feature element of the coverage. So knowing that, you know, because...
Yeah, because it's a year away. I mean, obviously, we're
sure
running at tracks that TVG will be covering and all the ADWs, but... Our documentary series, I wish we could rush that, but, you know, it's going to take a year of footage and editing and whatever all these TV guys do. But we've hired a top-notch guy in Hollywood, and we've got Billy Rappaport to be the equine part of that, so I'm pretty excited about that.
No, absolute. Well, is there a website yet for people to visit?
Yep, ntl.racing. Go out there and buy those tickets.
Oh, unbelievable. I hadn't even thought about that until I just asked. Well, there it is. It pops right up. The new.
Well, we're starting to, you know, like, this is where I'm sure, and listen, I'm a skeptic on things by tickets, but we're getting events. So one of the things that's going to be very different, and the event guy is down to, I think, 2 or 3 of the talents, but we're going to have a pretty strong event, or a very strong event in Nashville. And so there are tickets when we sell them, or VIPs there, and then VIPs at the track. So, you know, this is one of the things that's funny when people say that they think this through. I've had to walk through tracks a lot when they're empty, which I never used to do, because we're buying space within the track. We're buying, you know, we're doing things very differently. The event team's going to bring in hip furniture for the hip areas. And, you know, some of these tracks, it's a lot of expense, because we're going to create an environment that makes people comfortable that are not racetrack people. They're not worried about your seat and my seat. I hate to tell you that, Steve. We're still going to sit where we sit. But these packages that are going to be on our site, it'll be great for people to sign up now, but it'll even be better when they know what kind of act they're getting. I mean, some of these events are going to have pretty strong talent.
Starting September, Labor Day weekend at Nashville, and then quite quickly, actually, what, 2 weeks later,
yep,
in Seattle at Emerald. Then the Meadowlands, mid-October, 13th, 14th, then out to Los Alamitos right after Breeders' Cup. And so if people are – that's an interesting sidebar, actually, for people that are coming for, yep, Breeders' Cup to stay around the next weekend. And the seating in the Vessels Club will be under a normal Saturday night, it's tough to get a ticket at the seat at the Vessels Club.
That would give you an example how excited these tracks are. We have the Vessels Club reserved,
of course,
and they've agreed to that,
of course.
A lot of the work that's gone into this. I mean, and like I think I said earlier, Tampa, they were the ones that pushed us. We were running earlier in the month because, you know, I kind of wanted to wrap up the year, but we started thinking about tying into the Outback Bowl, and I think it's called something else now. But so we're going to run December 31st. It was their idea. How about that? And a New Year's Eve celebration. Someone's buying a lot of drinks at that $1 million they win.
There you go. And Tampa on the 30th and the 31st. There's, you know, parties the night before, and then the race day event. I did see, you know, somebody attack the choice of Nashville. Well, somebody said, oh, the hotbed of let me tell you, from whoever that was making that crack. I was there last weekend for the Iroquois, which is the biggest social event in Nashville. They are very much a hotbed of equine interest. So, I mean, the narrow-mindedness that has greeted this is stunning, and I'll take the over in on the success quotient here, Tom. I applaud everybody involved. Is there anybody that you should also? You've mentioned a few names. Who else is going to have a major role in this that we should know about?
Well, you know, like it's, these owners, I'll be honest with you, I've got my hands full. I mean, Randall and Bob have really been the key. The founders are the ones addressing these owners. I'm going to actually meet with a lot of these guys for the first time. Belmont Week, we're going to have an event, but for the owners, but I have not had anything to do with that. I'm using the press release. There's a lot. I will tell you, you know, I get myself, I'm an attorney's nightmare because there's things we're supposed to say and obviously things we're not supposed to say, but there's some pretty interesting names that are on our ownership list that haven't signed the contract. But once they sign a contract, we'll do that. So I think one of the great things is challenging for me, as you said, we've got to deal with the naysayers, but I'm okay with it. I really am. I mean, as long as we're all respectful, we all have an opinion. We'll get through this. We're not going to please everybody, but I think it's going to be great that you're going to start constantly getting news about this league because we're going to be adding more and more owners like Joe Besseker. I mean, you know, he bought in. I'll tell you this. I mean, I'm disappointed because we just weren't ready. We were running at Parks, had a contract with Parks, and unfortunately just couldn't make it work. We were going to run July 4th weekend because, you know, they don't run on Saturdays and Sundays anymore. And that's where there's challenges to be made in this because we work within, the racetrack's dates. But Besseker wanted to stay involved. He's an investor in a team. He's just going to be on the away team every event this year. But we'll be at Parks next year. So they were super excited about it. We were going to have a big event there July 4th weekend. And just, you know, we want to do it right. It's like anything. It's a startup. I've never been involved in one. I've always heard all the nightmares. And, you know, just when you think things are perfect, there's something else you forgot. And so we've delayed till September because we think that's when we're ready to really hit the ground running.
Well, Tom, you know that whatever communications I can help with, don't hesitate. I do see there's already all kinds of social platforms. I'll put up the Twitter link, but you're on all the appropriate spots. And again, ntl.racing is the website. Wow, I'm just looking at the Twitter feed. There was an article in Rolling Stone yesterday that.
And that's another point I guess I didn't bring up because I'm not a social media guy. We have a social media team.
Sure.
And that's just the world that, you know, hey, I'm too old for it, but it's important. And that's why I think it's important people understand the NTL was funded and it's very diverse with its responsibilities. And they thought this through. We've got, like I said, we've got a marketing team. We've got a sponsorship team. We've got a lot of teams. And I'm a horse guy, so I just kind of keep my nose where I'm supposed to. And every once in a while, I'll give them an opinion, and they tell me to go back and do the horse stuff.
Well, you've had your hands in so many areas. You helped stabilize the difficult situation for the TRF, and you and Mike Lakow, and you know, you've been brought in to put out fires. Here it looks like you're going to try to light a fire. And Todd Lute, I best of luck, and let me know how I can, you know, how I can contribute any way I can.
Appreciate it. We love your show, man. We love you. Thank keeping you, the horse world out there.
I appreciate that, Tom Lute. Everybody,
right.
And I'm going to keep using my Howard Cosell when I say the National Thoroughbred League. There it is.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Tom Lute, everybody. And I mean, that I think that hits most of the top line and a few of the tangents, but there's a lot to it. And I mean, I know I this morning, I just early, I just was just so aghast, actually, at the reaction. You know, here's a bunch of people putting up millions and millions of dollars because they believe in the viability of racing as an entertainment and as a you know, competition venue, and, you know, as something that people can enjoy as a collective experience. And all of that can only, you know, distill into the things that we need most, meaning owners and bettors. You gotta get them, you know, to the table and to the experience. That's a big part of the challenge. So if it does that, and with the kinds of people that have signed on, it feels like you know, they're poised potentially to make that happen. So give it a chance. I may have missed the chance to talk to Juan Leyva, but let me try Juan, and because he's, you know, getting on horses, John Sadler's assistant these days, but a long association with Bill Kaplan, and I want Bill remembered appropriately. And if we can't get Juan now, I'll get him tomorrow. But hopefully, I was trying to slip it in with the Harrow break, which I may have missed. Yeah, I think he's out. Hey, there we go. We didn't miss you, Juan. Juan Leyva joins us. Juan, good morning. I appreciate being able to get to you.
No problem. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Juan, gotta just first and foremost say just how sorry we were to hear of Bill Kaplan's passing, and I know how much he meant to you and your career. You know, those that got to know him, particularly with Musical Romance, but just a wonderful person. Tell everybody about being around Bill Kaplan.
Well, you know, obviously he did a lot for my career, but the thing he was the most to me was a dear friend. Even after he retired and I left Florida, we always talked. He was especially fond of calling me when Flightline was running because that horse really got him excited. And we stayed in contact, like I said, quite a bit. And he was just an unbelievable person. Aside from being a good horseman, a good trainer, he was an even better person.
You know, you talk about your career, and when you look at you know, a lot of the best horses, I mean, there's a few there, and at the top, we talk about Musical Romance. It's unbelievable that they're running the Musical Romance on Saturday at Gulfstream. You can't make it up.
No, you can't. And, you know, like I said, I stayed in contact even after I left California, but the recent weeks, I knew he wasn't doing well, and I made sure to call him quite a bit, and I think I spoke to him about 5 or 7 days before he passed, and I was just glad that I was still able to, you know, to talk to him while he was in bad shape. And at least I know he loved hearing about, you know, my success here in California, but the thing that he also really loved to hear was about my kids, my family. You know, he was really invested in all of that.
You know, it was funny because even before Musical Romance burst on the scene, he had that great season with the three-year-olds that were all there was literally a chance for him to have three horses in the Derby, and ended up with Wild and Crazy and Storm and May. But that was some wild 2- and 3-year-old season, and you were in the middle of that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it really seemed like when I really got in, able to pick up quite a bit of horses, actually. And, you know, we were just on a nice little roll for a while there where we couldn't really do anything wrong. Everything was running great. All the babies were running great out of the box. And I mean, it was just a great time.
And I'm trying to remember, which one did you ride in the Derby? Because I know you had one of them.
Yeah, I rode Storm and May.
Storm and May.
Yeah, he finished 16th. And the one that was on the bubble was on the Wild and Crazy Guy. And he ended up getting in, and he's the one that finished fourth with Mark Guidry.
How about that with Gid?
Yeah.
That's pretty funny. And then came Musical Romance, and I mean, her run. And talk about what it means for you, and how that came, what it was like to make a run with a Breeders' Cup winner like that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, when I started, I broke her maiden in her 2-year-old campaign, and then I ended up going to Tampa for a little bit. And when I came back, obviously I wasn't on her, but later on when she was 4, he let me ride her back. And when we won that first stake with her at Calder, the Emma Bovary, we knew she was going to be quite a talented sprinter then. And I mean, just that whole year, it was perfection on what Bill did on his part, training that filly to the Breeders' Cup filly and mare sprint.
And just looking at that, that was 2011. Yeah. 2011. And leading up, you know, she of course was one of the fillies or mares that won the Presque Isle Masters. I mean, it's remarkable how many filly and mare sprint winners it's produced. And the TCA as well, second, though, in the TCA. Talk about going to Churchill and winning the filly and mare sprint.
Well, you know, what made it really exciting was that we actually got a chance to train her at Churchill before the race. This was probably after she ran in the Presque Isle Masters. He left her at Churchill to train over there, and I flew in and worked her, and she had an unbelievable work on that track that day. And when we finished second with her at Keeneland in the TCA, I was really bummed because I knew we needed a win to get into the Breeders' Cup. And finally, when Bill, you know, pulled the trigger and said, I'm paying the money, I'm putting up all the money to go, I'm at a point in my career where this is the only chance I'm going to get. And when he told me we were going, I was so confident we would win that race. You know, and a week out before the race, we worked her at Calder, and I remember she went 57 and change for 5/8. And anybody that was familiar with that surface knew that if a horse could work that fast, they were the real deal.
That's for sure. The loose, deep surface like that. And, the only other place I think of about Calder Works was for good 2-year-olds that were then going to go on to run in the Delta Jackpot or the Delta Princess, because the surface at Delta was the same as very similar to Calder. And so when you would see a good Calder 2-year-old coming into Delta, you made me laugh thinking about that. One thing I forgot about that sprint. Musical Romance, you guys were 20-1.
Yeah, you know, we were 20-1, but I'm not kidding you when I tell you that I didn't think there was any way that I could lose that race. I went in there and rode her with all the confidence I had in her. And I mean, everything just worked out great. We had a beautiful trip on the inside. The hole opened up when I needed to, and she just kicked on through. And I just remember crossing the wire and just feeling the elation of just, you know, all a lifetime of work just come together to be at the biggest day that we have in the game, and to be a winner. And not only that, but for the partners involved, Bill, obviously, what a tremendous person he was, but also Adam Lazarus from Pinnacle Racing.
Right.
You know, they all stuck with me. You know, I was with Bill after we finished second in Keeneland, and I distinctly remember Steve Bass called him the morning after and asked him, "Hey, Bill, if you're thinking of running the filly in the Breeders' Cup, I have Julian Leperu. He's available." And I'll never forget this. Bill told him, "Steve, if we run, I have my rider. Juan's going to ride her." And that just, it made me feel really good. You know, Bill was an honest man. When he said something, he did it. There was no two ways about it. You know, he was, like I said, aside from being a good person, good trainer, he always stuck to his word. And I can't say enough good about him.
There was a real calm and quiet about him. He was a very gentle. There was like a gentle way about him.
Yeah, but you know what though? The great thing about him was when you really got to know him, he was actually a pretty funny guy.
Oh,
and he was an incredibly intelligent individual.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, you would always think, "Oh, he's not paying attention," but he knew everything that was going on. And he was, like I said, I mean, it's a huge loss for me because, you know, I've lost somebody that I can just pick up the phone and call him and talk about whatever I'm going through in my life. And he would always give me advice, and he was always an ear that would listen.
Yeah, that's not beautifully put. Juan Leyva is with us from Santa Anita and paying tribute to Bill Kaplan and using Musical Romance. They're going to run the Musical Romance Stakes Saturday at Gulfstream, and I'm sure there'll be, you know, plenty of mention and acknowledgement of Bill's life and career. You know, one thing, there's one irony, I suppose, Juan, that I got to bring up about the Breeders' Cup win. Has John Sadler ever given you any grief because you beat his nice filly?
You know, all the time, because obviously John and I have always been good friends. And when I left California, we always stayed in touch. And I remember when I rode in the Derby, he called me to wish me luck. And when we were in the Breeders' Cup and I beat him, he called me a week later. And as soon as I saw the number, I answered. I said, "Damn, John." I said, "It took you long enough to call me. I know you're hurt."
That was with Switch, the nice filly.
Yeah,
Switch.
With Switch. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Well, and then, you know, you did. That was not the end of her career by any means, because when she came back the next year, she didn't run as well in the Filly and Mare Sprint at Santa Anita, but she did. Arguably may have run her best race of her career. You can tell me this, in the Princess Rooney that year.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the year before we lost the Princess Rooney by a head. I mean, it was a hard loss, but it was so awesome to come back the next year in the same race with the same horse. And to be able to win that race was just vindication, because I really felt like the year before we could have won it if she would have seen that filly coming on the outside. And I'll never forget Bobby Newman's call when he said, "A Musical Romance will not be denied in 2012. So that was pretty special.
Well, no denying the wonderful relationship you enjoyed with Bill Kaplan. And, I mean, he was really a delight. I got to know him pretty well. And our last conversation was, you know, when he retired. Juan, I can't thank you enough for this.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Steve. I really appreciate it. I'm glad I was able to, you know, maybe shine some light on parts of Bill's life that people didn't know. Because, like I said, I think the biggest and best thing about him was his heart.
Absolutely perfect. Juan Leyva, everybody, out as number one assistant for John Sadler on the West Coast. And we'll see you soon, Juan. Thank you.
Sounds good, Steve. Thank you so much.
Juan Leyva and Bill Kaplan and Musical Romance. There's our Wednesday get together, and I Seth Barrow, I'm sure Seth's listening. I don't know what to say, Seth. I'm sorry. I'll get Seth tomorrow. This is a tired act. Not getting to Seth, but I couldn't rush Tom Lute out of here. I wanted to. Every question I could think of that came up. But thanks to Juan Leyva. Thanks to Bill Kaplan. Tom Wu, the National Thoroughbred Lead. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Folk is brought to you by Hillendale and Dick Powell for some HKJC and some PID, some Presque Isle Downs. I'll put Dick's analysis of the 8 races up at the website. And we'll try to do that regularly. And we'll be back right here at 9 o'clock for the Thursday edition, which will include Seth Merrill. Thanks, everybody. Good luck if you're playing. Nice cards out there for this Wednesday, including Crest and Indy. And replay tomorrow, 6 to 9 here on SiriusXM. Archive podcast later on this afternoon. I'll talk to you in the morning. Thanks.
At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves.